Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zibbymedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Katrina Lino is the author of The Umbrella Maker's Son. She is also the manager of Zibby's Bookshop in Santa Monica, California. If you are a frequent visitor or you're going in for the first time, ask for Katrina. Have her sign her book for you. She is amazing. Katrina was born on the East Coast and currently lives in Los Angeles. She is the author of 7 critically acclaimed novels, including You Must Not Miss, Horrid, and Sometime in Summer. The Umbrella Maker's Son is her middle grade debut. She has always loved the rain. Welcome, Katrina. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss The Umbrella Maker's Son.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
This is so funny for us since you are the Zibby's Bookshop amazing store manager. So we get to talk all the time about that kind of stuff and not as often about your book. So,
yeah, actually, my 1 year anniversary at the bookshop is coming up in just a couple months. I know. Time really flew by.
Wow. Well, you really swept in and just got us all straightened out. And, you know, it's amazing what you've done with the place. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The Umbrella Maker's Son. Yes. Tell the listeners what your book is about.
Yeah. So this is my first middle grade novel. So it's for ages, you know, 8-ish to 12-ish. And I have always wanted to write a middle grade novel. So this is really exciting. Usually, my previous books have all been for teens. So I've had this idea for a really long time. And I mean, a really long time, meaning like 50 and 20 years. And I kept trying and sort of failing to write it. I would write different, you know, iterations. I would write a short story. I would write You know, at one point I thought it was going to be a graphic novel, but the general idea of the story has really stayed the same. And the idea is a fantasy. It takes place in another world. It takes place in a city called Rhone. And in Rhone, it is always raining. And it focuses on a little boy named Oscar. And his father is an umbrella maker, and his father's father was an umbrella maker, and his father's father was an umbrella maker. And it really runs in the family, and it kind of makes sense because it always rains in their city. But in recent years, a sort of big bad wolf industry corporation company has kind of swept in and started making very cheap umbrellas, and it has threatened the whole Buckle Umbrella Corporation. So Oscar's dad is really struggling to pay bills. Oscar is struggling because he doesn't want to be an umbrella maker and he doesn't know how to tell his dad that. And so that is sort of the jumping off point for the whole story.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And the way you write is so wonderful. And I know I told you this at the time, but my son, who is a big reader, like was clutching this book to his chest, like leaving school, coming home from school. I mean, it was the best thing ever. It was like bringing a little piece of you into their school. It was just so cool.
That's so sweet.
And he is a very discerning reader. So, you know, that is the highest praise. But I also enjoyed it myself tremendously. You're so great and clever, and your little asterisks. How do you even say that?
Asterisks? Yeah.
With, you know, all this commentary and your voice is just so accessible and relatable, and there's such a fun sense of humor to it, and yet also immersive. I don't know. It's like, it's great. And what a great premise for a story.
Yeah,
that's why we brought all these umbrellas for the store, but now nobody's buying them. But anyway, at least we have them. Wait, tell me more about so you had the idea for a long time, how you turned it into a reality.
I started writing this version of it during the early pandemic. I think I just needed something really like happy and kind of joyful to work on. My last couple young adult books had been sort of darker, which is also very fun to write, but I think I needed a little bit of a break from that. And I also just needed to work on something that at the time, to me, it felt very like low pressure. It had never worked before. So I kind of went into it, maybe assuming a little bit that it wasn't going to work this time. So it was never like, oh, I need to write this book that I sell. It was just like, I need to write something that's going to make me happy and that's going to take my mind off things. And so I really think it was kind of just a happy coming together of all these different things. Like finally this story clicked in my head, you know, it was the right time. It was the right place. And, you know, it worked. And it's interesting that you mentioned the footnotes, the asterisks, because that was one thing that when I was trying to sell the book, my publisher, so I sold it to Little Brown, who had done my previous few YA novels. And my editor at the time was like, we really love this book, but we don't think footnotes are right for a middle grade novel. Like, we don't think kids will understand them. And I have two nieces who I'm very close with. They're both 9. So at the time they were like 7 when I was trying to sell this. And I was thinking about them and I was like, actually, to me, it feels like almost like an inside joke and like an inside like conversation between me and the reader. And both of my nieces, after they finally read the book this past year, they were like, we loved the footnotes. Mm-hmm. Like, we had never seen a footnote before. We thought that was so cool. It felt so like kind of grown up for them to read. And to me, I was like, you have to like learn what a footnote is eventually. So what better way than in, you know, a story like this, where I feel like it makes a lot of sense because it takes place in a fantasy world. So a lot of the times the footnotes are explaining a word we don't have in this world, or they're explaining a sport we don't have in this world, or they're explaining different types of rain, of course, in the city where it's always raining. So I don't know. The whole experience was just like really joyful to write and really exciting to like have kids like your son and my nieces like read it and really respond to it. I was like, yeah, I was right.
Oh, you were totally right. Even if the kids didn't know what a footnote was, think about all the crazy things that happen in children's books, right? Mm-hmm. There are flaps. There's like, you know, choose your own adventures. There's, you know, just like so many formatting things that people are always putting in front of kids. And then from that, they go to just text. I mean, right? I mean, if nothing else, it's just blocks of text in different places or something. I don't know. So no, I'm glad you held firm on that.
Yeah, I'm happy too, because there was a moment where I had this like conversation with my agent, and she, you know, she really loved the footnotes, and it was definitely a conversation. And then of course the audiobook rights sold, and it was another conversation, because they, you know, they were sort of like, we can't put footnotes in the book. Like, that doesn't make sense for an audiobook. And I recently, actually, my niece was listening to the audiobook, and she played me some, and I had never listened to it before, because I'm kind of like a hands-off author. Like, once it's out in the world, go do what you want to do with it. I had just like, great, it's an audiobook, that's awesome. But I had never wanted to listen to it myself. And she played it for me, and they do like omit some footnotes, but then they also do some footnotes as asides, which I thought was, you know, like little almost parentheticals in the way that they, so yeah, it really worked out. And the audiobook is very fun too.
So you've referenced your past books. So what number book is this?
This is number 8.
Wow. And how did you get your start writing? Did you always want to be a writer? Like, tell me about your younger life and this vast sense of creativity that you have and imagination.
Yeah, it's definitely, as corny as this sounds, it was a calling from a very young age. I used to write short stories when I was, you know, 6 or 7. I was really fascinated with books. My mom used to take me to the library every day after school, and I would just get like a stack of books. And that's kind of all I did. Like, I played with Barbies, I played with Matchbox cards, but you know, my main hobby was sort of just reading. And I remember the moment I had this like little epiphany when I was, I don't know, like 9 or 10, I asked my mom, like, where do books come from, actually? Like, you know, how do they get to the library? And she said, well, people write them. And I mean, 30 years later, I remember this conversation so distinctly, because my brain was like, I'm so, what? Like, people write books, like, you can just choose to do that. And it never went away. I was writing short story. I wrote a lot of just super angsty poetry in like middle school and high school. And then when I was in high school, when I was 16, my English teacher brought a short story competition into the classroom, and it was for young writers. And the prize was to be published in the Connecticut Literary Review. I'm pretty sure that's the name of it. It was like, you know, this old literary magazine. And I won. And it was so, I mean, it was very cool. Like, I went to this little award ceremony, and then, you know, my story was published. It was called The Long Way. And I do not know if I could even find a copy of this. Someone asked me the other day, I was like kind of telling the same story, and they were like, can I read it? And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I even have to go back and look for that.
Wow, that is so special. Don't you wonder too about the person who didn't get chosen, who was like sitting right next to you, and how their life dream of being an author might have gotten totally squashed? Like, how little encouragement we need.
Yeah.
Not that that's little, that's a huge deal. It's a huge, huge deal. But just that without encouragement, so many dreams just die right there.
Yeah. I mean, I've also been rejected so many times and not quit. So hopefully that person did not quit. And hopefully. And when, you know what I mean? But it was kind of weird how they chose a semifinalist. I don't know how many there were, let's say like 3 or 4. And then they brought everyone into a room. So yeah, there were definitely like little 16-year-olds who didn't get chosen. I hope they kept on with it because, you know, at the end of the day, winning a writing contest when you're 16 is like fun, but it's not the decider of whether you are worthy of, you know, this career.
So then did you go to college and you decided you wanted to go to college for writing and everything? What happened next?
Yeah, I just had a very strange college experience. I went to a college that didn't work out. I ended up transferring to Emerson in Boston, which is a very, you know, liberal arts school. But I was there for like 3 semesters. And I just think I wasn't super ready to like be away from my family and be like immersed in this new, I was maybe like a late bloomer, just kind of, I was super lonely and like just, it wasn't working out. So I dropped out of that college. I took a little bit of a break, and then I ended up finishing my degree at UConn, the University of Connecticut, which is not a liberal arts school. It's a very big like sports school, a big like teaching school, everything except writing. But I did major in English, but I was able to like live from home, just commute. And I majored in English, but I don't really think that's, I would almost suggest that people maybe don't do that if they're interested in writing, because I almost think like learning about any other topic in the world is going to be helpful in your writing and inform your writing. And I did a master's program in writing actually too in Scotland. And that was, you know, not necessary at all. Like, I loved it. I loved living in Scotland for a year, and that part of it was all really great. But the program itself, you know, I wish I had done something totally random and, like, you know, just, like, learned about different things. I love learning about literature and writing, though, but I don't think you have to.
Interesting. Why Scotland?
Honestly, I don't know. I had always wanted to go there. I had never been there before. You know, I was looking at a couple different programs abroad. I knew I wanted to do. So it was a master's program, not an MFA. So it was only a year. And I was really interested in genre fiction at the time. A lot of my books, you know, this is a fantasy book. A lot of my young adult books were sort of have, you know, elements of fantasy in them. And so I found a course in genre fiction. So it was basically like a one-year master's program that sort of specialized in fantasy and science fiction. And I thought that was really cool. Like, you don't really see a lot of that here. Like, in America, it's very, like, you know, literary fiction is the only kind of fiction that is, like, important or worth studying. That's so silly. So I just, the program kind of called to me. It ended up not being a great program, though. But again, like, the experience of, like, living outside of my comfort zone for a year was, I think, you know, beneficial to my growth. And I actually sold my first book right before the program started. So I was, you know, in the program for a year doing revisions on my book. Then I came back to America and my book came out. My first book came out in 2014. So it was a very exciting few years.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Oh my gosh. And what was the name of the first book?
My first book that came out was called The Half-Life of Molly Pierce. It feels so long ago. You know, I wrote it when I was 26, 27, and then sold it when I was 27. So it came out when I was 29. Yeah, this year is 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the book that I feel the, like, kind of the least attached to, like the least close to. It feels like a different person wrote it, to be honest. It was just feels like another lifetime ago, but it, you know, it launched a whole very, you know, in my mind, successful, satisfying career of writing books for younger people, which is, you know, it's always what I've wanted to do my whole life.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And tell me about bookstore, what bookstore life and what that's like for you now and how it's informed your writing, if at all.
Yeah, I have always wanted to work in a bookstore. You know, writing is incredible. A small selection of people are able to write as a full-time career. Most people are not. And so I've always kind of had jobs here and there, like supplementing my writing income, you know, different experience. And usually that was in fashion. I worked in fashion for a very long time. And then I was let go a year into the pandemic. And I took a couple years off and I kind of like applied for some copywriting jobs, applied for some copy editing jobs. I've never really wanted to do that, but it sort of like makes sense as a writer, like, oh, what do I do now? I guess copywriting. And then I really wanted to work in a bookstore. I had somehow never worked in a bookstore before. And I applied for a job at Diesel before Zivvy's was open. And they didn't hire me, which is a loss on their part. And then I was just happened to be talking to my partner's aunt one day. And she works for Ingram, of course. And she was like, what about Zivvy's bookshop? They just opened. And I had never heard of it. It had been like open for 2 weeks at that point. And it really like fell into my lap and became such a cool experience. It's like the best. It's close to my apartment. Everyone who works there is just delightful. We're a really close team. When I think now about eventually I'd love to write an adult novel. And I think working at the bookstore has been incredible for that, because I know more about books than I feel like I've ever had before. Like, we're constantly talking about new books that come out. We're constantly getting new books in the store. Like, everyone's reading something. There's so much time to just like talk about literature. And, you know, this store carries all ages, but it, for me, it's been really helpful being like, oh, okay, what adult books are coming out? What adult books are getting popular? And so eventually, hopefully, I'll write my first adult book. And I think this whole experience will be very helpful for that.
That's great. I'm writing my next novel. It's set in a bookstore in Santa Monica.
Amazing.
So,
that's awesome. Like,
I cannot just write my life here. I've got to, you know, at least mix up some details. Maybe she should be blonde. I don't know. But yeah, even, you know, I know I'm hardly there compared to you, but the time that I've spent there has already totally changed. You know, when you watch people shop and just listen to the conversations, it's like the mm-hmm. best listening thing. What are people looking for and why and who's recommending? And it's like a dream.
Yeah, it's really special. I think like it is just not inspiring helping someone choose a dress. And, you know, it's so inspiring talking to people about what they want to read. And like, I know so many customers' names now. I know, like, we have a customer who comes in every week for like her new read. We have a customer who comes in every week with her daughter for her daughter's new read. And it's like, it's so nice.
It's so nice. So how do you manage your writing brain versus everything else? Like when you were in fashion and like, when would you write at night or the weekends, or how did you pull all that off?
Usually I write, I'm always like better in the morning. So usually I'm writing in the mornings. I can't really write unless I'm like really on a time crunch or like really feeling inspired by something. It's hard for me to write at night. Night is like my reading time, my like, you know, sort of decompressing from the day. So usually now my schedule is like, you know, I usually get to the bookstore around like 9:30. So up by 6, write for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours if it's a great morning. Right now I'm working on edits for my book that comes out next year. It's another teen book. It's called Haunted Hearts, and it's being published by Wednesday Books at Macmillan, which is very exciting. And so, you know, the routine looks a little different now. It's less, you know, frantic writing, and it's more like, how do I fix this plot hole? My editor pointed out. And, you know, on the weekends, I try to kind of stick to that same schedule, like write in the morning and then have the rest of the day. Routines really work for me. You know, I don't really like write at coffee shop, even though it sounds so romantic. And I love when people like are able to go write at coffee shops. It doesn't really work for me. I always like immediately have to pee or I'm hungry or I'm thirsty or just like, you know, immediately distracted by everything going on around me. So Yeah, I'm like a sitting at my desk, you know, writing for a couple hours and then we're done.
Wow. That's really cool. What, do you have a pub date yet?
I don't. We're hoping for November 2025, which feels like a million years off. But then I remember that we're almost in March of 2024. Yeah. And your book comes out in a few days, which is so exciting.
It does. But my next book is supposed to come out in October of 2025. And I have no idea how I'm going to do that because I haven't finished writing it yet.
Yeah. Well, you still have a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm glad Diesel did not hire you because seriously, it's been such a wonderful thing working with you and having you run something that's so important to me and doing such a good job. So it's really wonderful.
Thank you. I feel the exact same way. I really do.
Do you have any parting advice for aspiring authors?
Yes. I think my biggest advice is don't hold on too closely to any one piece of advice. You know, I think that growing up, I always heard the same, you know, I read a lot of the books, you know, there's some great writing books out there and, you know, I read all of them and, but I kept hearing like advice that didn't end up serving me. Like you have to write every day or you're not a writer. Like who came up with that? Like, my God, if you'd rather go on a hike than write, like go on a hike. You know, I'm just like, I'm so of the mindset that like everything you do informs your writing, even if it doesn't look like writing at all, even if it's going on a hike or going on a walk or going for a run or going on a bike ride or like going shopping sometimes, you know, I'll just make sure whatever I'm doing, I'm kind of open to like what's going on around me. You never know what you're going to hear or see that like sparks an idea. And so, yeah, just stay open to the idea that everything around you can be inspiration and you don't have to like fit yourself into one specific idea or one, you know, specific box of like what a writer is supposed to do or look like.
I love that. All right. Last question. Do you prefer rain or sunshine?
Oh man, I love them both so much. I can't pick. I love the rain in LA, especially because the city just like changes when it rains. You know, it really changes in a way that, you know, I lived in New York for a while and it doesn't change on the East Coast. People are just like, great, it's raining. And here it's just like this special thing. So I think for now, my answer will be rain.
Love it. Well, it is raining here today, or it was actually, it looks like it still might be. And I was toting my umbrella around today. So it was the perfect day for the umbrella maker.
Nice.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. That's why it rained today, apparently.
Oh, I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Katrina, congratulations. So excited about your next book. Oh my gosh. And your wonderful career and your adult book to come. And it's just so cool. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me. This was really fun.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.